Okay, we now move to our next session, which is the doctrine of God. And as a reminder, every question we're going to answer using the same formula. Number one, we're going to define our terms. Number two, we're going to state our answer. And then number three, we're going to present the biblical evidence for our position. And if you're like, oh man, Rob, you're telling me this way too many times, I really want this to be in your mind so that you get this piece, if nothing else. This will help you answer every question. Even if you struggle with a particular one, following this outline will help you answer them all. Well, we talked about the Bible first, and with good reason, because without the Scriptures, we don't know very much about God, except that He's mad at us. We can't learn much about Him or His character. We can't understand what He expects me to do. But ultimately, we do not worship the Bible. Right? The Bible is not the fourth member of the Trinity. The Bible is important. We believe the Bible should be important. However, the reason that the Bible is important is because we worship the God of the Bible. And that Bible helps us understand how to have a meaningful relationship with God. It helps me know how to have an increasing relationship with God. And if I can just exhort you for a minute on the counseling side of the equation, I think sometimes this emphasis is missed. In other words, when somebody comes to see you and they're in a complete disaster, then you will often ask the question of, where is God in the midst of all this? But what happens when the person comes who says, you know, my marriage is a 6 and I'd like to get it to an 8. And we just fight just a little bit too much, and you're thinking to yourself, well, you know what? I got 4 principles for this and 4 principles for that. I know exactly what's going on. And so you just start delivering it and start delivering the homework. You know exactly what to do. You've done it 1,000 times before. And sometimes we miss the fact that what that person needs is a deeper relationship with the Lord more than they need the 3 principles that you have. They need both. But they need the relationship with the Lord that's going to make permanent and lasting change. And so it's my hope that as a result of our time focusing on the Lord today, that we might have an increased knowledge of our great God and we'll be able to answer these questions. In other words, I don't think this theology exam is just an exam to spot off some truth, but it's actually something to think about, to ponder, to rejoice about. Well, let's get to the first question, and one of the things I said yesterday was that most questions can be answered in a good paragraph, much less than a half or certainly less than a full page, and that's true on the bibliology section. When it comes to the theology proper section or the doctrine of God, that's not necessarily going to be true. These are some of the longer questions on the exam. And it's very important. This question is one that I personally ask more people to rewrite than probably any other. And I'll explain why in just a minute. I would like to see, on a question like this, the answer being developed in 3 steps. Number 1, a clear definition of Trinity, or if you prefer, triunity. Either term can be used. But a clear, concise definition. This is absolutely critical and cannot be skipped. You have to define Trinity. What do you mean by Trinity? Because if you explain it wrong, you come out sounding like either a tritheist, which means you believe in 3 gods, or you come out as a sabellianist, who believes that it's one God in 3 manifestations. God showing up as the Father, and then God showing up as the Son, or God showing up as the Holy Spirit. And so definition is very important here. And here is one of those times you copy, and you copy religiously without, you don't need to cite it. This is the definition. The Trinity is the doctrine that God is one essence or being in 3 co-equal, co-eternal persons. That is the definition of the Trinity. And if you would like to use Grudem's, you would like to use Erickson, I think this one's Erickson's. Grudem has one very, very similar. The bottom line is this has to be a clear, concise definition of what you mean. And I'd like to take just a brief excursus to talk about why this definition is so important. During the first 100 years of the church, after Jesus has ascended, few people would have had access to much more than a single book or maybe two books of the New Testament. And so some of them wouldn't even have had the Old Testament unless they had grown up within Judaism. And so systematic theology, as we know it, really wasn't based on the whole Bible. It was based on what you had. And then around 200 AD or so, the canon had officially been recognized as this is what God has given us. And so more and more people are beginning to have access to the whole thing. And several historical forces began to converge. One is we have the availability of the whole New Testament. Two, we have the continued growth and expansion of the church. And three, the salvation of many who grew up in paganism rather than in Judaism. And you put those three together in a bowl and stir them up, and what you get are debates. You get debates. And there were all kinds of questions that one such occurred over the Trinity. And I think it's good for us to remember that what they were trying to do wasn't simply to create a bunch of heresies, but rather to understand what they were finding in the Bible. So the debate over the Trinity itself became very important. In fact, the losers were heretics and were often, killed. I'd say that's pretty important, wouldn't you? And thus, the debate came to a head with two men, Arian and Athanasius. Arian taught that there was only one God. That's a good thing. However, he said that Jesus was created by God before the creation of the world, and therefore Jesus was not eternal, nor was he the same divine essence with the Father. And if you wonder, well, how in the world did he come up with that? It's from passages of the Bible, such as John 14:28, where Jesus says, he is greater than me. And Arian said, well, if Jesus himself said that he is greater than me, then he must be of a different divine essence than I am. Well, many people began to follow him. And so a council was convened. Athanasius, on the other hand, was like, there is no way you're reading those passages correctly. He said instead that Jesus was the same divine essence with the Father, and eternal and not created. In other words, he took issue with both of Arian's points. And at the Council of Nicaea in 325, they convened to listen to the arguments. And Athanasius was ultimately declared the winner of that debate. However, the council said very little about the Holy Spirit. Guess what the next debate was about? The Holy Spirit. And that debate wasn't even settled until Augustine at the Council of Chalcedon in 451. Now, here's my point. I took that brief excursus to say every single word of the definition of the Trinity was debated over 100 years. And if you lost, you died. That was a big deal. And so these debates were incredibly important. And in the last 1,500 years, we have not come up with a statement that's any better, even though some have actually tried. And so this little trip was, in some sense, to show that the importance of history in the development of our theology, and to encourage us not to write a statement on our own, but rather to use one that's been hashed out over many years through many debates and many struggles. You don't always have to be original. In fact, if you are original, that might raise a question of whether or not you're orthodox.